Welcome to this episode of Just the Disc. My name is Brian Sauer. This is my podcast about Blu-rays. Hey, it is October and it is new arrivals time, so I'm here with my pal Rob Galuzzo. Hello, Rob.
In person.
In person.
Because believe it or not, we do not record the show normally in person. We do it remotely.
Have we done any in person since we started doing it? Maybe one?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe before we made it a monthly column. Yeah. But I don't think, not since we kicked off the new arrivals segment.
Which is crazy because I guess it kind of always felt like we started there and then went to Skype. But anyway, it's nice to be in the same room.
I know, right? Cool.
It's a little harder to arrange sometimes with our schedules, but this is awesome. So
I'm hiding my stack regardless.
And I'm hiding mine as well. So we still don't know what we're showing.
I have a sneaky suspicion we may have one in common.
I think we do. But that's okay because it's a really good disc. And yes. I think that's all right. Especially for October, I think it fits, you know?
Yeah.
Whether or not you want to call it a horror movie or not, we can get into that. But
and I will have mostly, well, I guess some of them are horror-ish. I was going to say, I know it's October and you probably expect a Halloween-themed episode, but I do that every week on Shockwaves.
I was
going to
say, I don't expect it.
So I'm actually going to go, I'm going to throw some curveballs as usual.
All right.
And I'm excited to hear what you got.
Yeah, I had initially a whole stack with like two horror movies in it, and then I was like, yeah, I'm just going to go all in and do all horror, and I don't expect Ooh. Rob to do it because I know he does it every week, and you can listen to Shockwaves if you want that, but if he throws in some horror, great, doesn't matter. But anyway, so yeah, I ended up in the last minute kind of shifting some things around, but
nice.
It was worthwhile. I think it'll be a fun little program of horror stuff.
Well, I know you watch my Letterboxd as well.
I do, although I didn't check it this weekend, so if you had some stuff in the last day or two,
oh, man.
Then I won't know.
Oh, and I went to France since last we did a
show. Oh, that's right.
You know, it aired, the illusion is it aired. but that was quite interesting. My runner-up pick touches into one of my experiences in France, so we'll circle back to that.
Sounds
I think you'll
good.
Appreciate it.
Well, why don't you kick it off? Let's see what you got on your show.
I have a sneaky suspicion that you also chose this Arrow release because it is a movie I'd never seen. I heard a lot about it. I don't know why I've never seen it. I think it was the availability thing. It was on DVD, but it wasn't the easiest movie to track down. I'm talking about a William Friedkin movie. Arrow just did an excellent job with Al Pacino in Cruising, and you did have it. So this is both of our number one picks
yes,
for right now.
Yes, this is good because, like I said, it's a great release.
How would you like to disappear?
Disappear?
Go undercover.
You know this man?
Who's here? I'm here. You're here.
These victims are all the same physical type.
What about him, Skip?
Late 20s, 140, 150 pounds. Dark hair, dark eyes.
Have you ever seen him before?
I want to send you out there to see if you can attract this guy.
How where?
A New York City detective in search of a killer is about to disappear into the night.
Is it dangerous?
I can't talk about it.
How do you know you're going to end up the same person when it's over?
Well, you go for it.
It is. Well, again, I'd never seen it. I think Friedkin has one of the most interesting filmographies of any filmmaker. And it's just a really down and dirty, gritty, questionably horror movie. But it's a killer in New York City, kind of in the backdrop, you know, early 80s, in the backdrop of kind of like the S&M scene. So not necessarily even gay culture, but a specific type of gay culture. The movie looks fantastic. It's a great, great transfer of it. I know a lot of people were disappointed that there weren't like a bevy of brand new special features. But you have to understand something. There are most of this stuff never gets out to the public anyway. There are so many stipulations when it comes to licensing a movie that you didn't actually produce. And one of the things we learned from Twilight Time when we had Nick Redman on Killer POV, our previous Shockwave show, is that sometimes you can license a movie, but that is all you're allowed to license. You actually cannot create new material for that disc, which means no new special features. Sometimes you're able to license pre-existing stuff. And so I'm going to guess, and I'm not speaking for Arrow because I don't know, they did not create new material for this, except for a commentary, which you surprised me with.
Yeah.
It's all archival. My guess is it was part of their license that they couldn't create anything new. Now, that said, the archival material on here is excellent.
Yes.
And that's the thing. It's like, I've never seen these special features. And a lot of them talk about, finding the book that it was based on, the many iterations of what the movie could have been before it ended up being, William Friedkin's version. And it's just really a fascinating look at New York from this time period and really racy even for today. That's the thing that I think is interesting is even though this is early 80s, it's such a time capsule of that time and yet still feels dangerous today, especially with how people are on edge these days as it is. But it's also inspired by somebody he met, a tech that he met on The Exorcist who ended up murdering somebody.
Yeah, that's so creepy, man.
And I think he tells the whole story of how he went and interviewed this gentleman who literally was just an extra in The Exorcist and loosely based it on him. And I was working on a similar themed project that falls into this world. And this was just a perfect find. But my recommendations to the people were you need to watch Cruising, Vice Squad, and Strip to Kill. So that is a bonkers triple feature if
Sounds
you want to
awesome.
Go that route.
Sounds awesome.
But I feel like all those films tie into each other quite a bit. What's your history with this film and what do you think of this particular release?
Well, my history is that I remember it on VHS and I remember it being kind of marginalized because of the representation of gay culture that it had and because of, at the time, how people perceived the Pacino performance as kind of campy or something. I can't remember. I mean, if you, there are certain gifts out there that if you just show people those, you could take away something a little bit different than obviously what the whole movie is. But I remember it being something of a punchline for a little while. And then now it's become more of a deserved classic.
Pacino is great in it.
He's really good.
It's one of his better performances.
I totally agree. And I think, and I won't spoil the ending, but it's a really powerful ending and a sort of a haunting ending. And I can't think of too many Pacino movies where he's given an opportunity to have that kind of an end to a performance.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot. As for this release, like you say, there's a lot of stuff ported over from the DVD, which I had. And this is a nice case where they did, back when they used to do nice special edition DVDs, they did a nice DVD of this. So we are getting some good stuff. So yeah, it's not new. But I've heard people complain about, the new commentary is great. It's, Friedkin and Mark Kermode, who is a big, big Friedkin fan and a big fan of this movie. And it's a great conversation and they go in depth and get into some interesting areas. I will say the original Friedkin commentary on the original DVD, which is ported over, my least favorite thing about the disc, it's fine, but I saw somebody complaining on Twitter about it, which is like, they called it, basically description of the movie for the hearing impaired or for the visually impaired.
You mean an old commentary that he probably did in the days when people didn't understand what audio commentaries could be?
Yeah, it could be.
If you're telling me the new one is good, then I'm definitely going to listen to that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's a little bit unfair. I think he definitely has some tidbits that come out. But there are obviously points where it devolves into him describing what's happening on this, and that's the old commentary. But he's much better in the interviews for the behind-the-scenes stuff. I think there's some really great bits.
Pacino, I put him right into these scenes and situations, and he was fairly well shocked by a lot of the things that he saw with all of this sexual activity, in fact, going on all around him. Very often he would come to the set and then he wanted to basically go out and improvise these scenes until something clicked. In looking at Cruising now, I can see that in many ways he has struck just the right note, a note of innocence in his character.
Yellow one, left side means you give, golden shower, right side you receive, the red one means... See anything you want?
I'm gonna go home and think about it.
He even talked about, no, you know what? I think it was in the commentary with Kermode where he talks about the killer in the movie has a really creepy way about him. And he speaks in like whispered tones.
Yeah.
And there's a famous bit that's in the trailer where he's saying like, I'm here, you're here, we're here. And apparently it comes out in the commentary that Friedkin had heard from one of the victims of one of the actual killers this is based on. This guy survived an attack, and he said that was something that the guy actually said to him.
Chilling.
I can't imagine what it must be like for that person if they could even watch this movie. I doubt it. But anyway, that was interesting. But there's a lot of stuff he brings to it, and I think it's a really interesting thriller and memorable and, you know, definitely something people need to keep in mind when you're thinking about how great Friedkin's filmography is. It's one of those movies. So
yeah, and I'd give it a, I think it's a horror movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a serial killer movie, right? And it's and Friedkin pulls some, this isn't spoiler stuff, but Friedkin is taking kind of a note from Hitchcock's Psycho, which is obviously Hitchcock did a lot of cheating to make you not know who the killer was in Psycho. And that includes using different cast, using different voices, really playing with it. And that's something that's so eerie about this movie is that because I think he is using different people for the killer.
Yeah. I think
and so part of you is like, it depends what kind of viewer you are. Part of you can accept that this is the conclusion of the movie. And then a little part of you might have doubt being like, wait, could it have been more than one person that I was just watching?
Yeah.
It's so ambiguous that I think that's kind of one of the most powerful things about it.
Absolutely.
Because any horror movie that gets under your skin and makes you think like, I don't know, maybe that person is still out there. I don't know for sure.
I like that a lot.
So yeah, that's one of the things I was, again, you said the ending was haunting for a completely different reason. But to me, it's haunting because that's what I think about after. And, you know, it's interesting. It's kind of the deal with a lot of this true crime stuff. Like, I just finished watching the new season of Mindhunter,
which I got to get into.
It's so good.
I love the first season.
That's the thing about serial killers that they profile. It's like they literally pin a bunch of crimes on one guy, even though they can't definitively say that he did all of them. he definitely did a few. And to me, it's like, that's chilling thinking, wait a minute, it's years later. That in real life, they don't know for sure that these serial killers are responsible for all the things they said they are.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's a really cool element that I don't think a lot of people pick up on for this movie.
Yeah. And I got to say, the transfer looks great. I mean, man, it's really one of the best discs of the year in terms of like, you know, a really nice transfer of a great film.
Yeah.
And hats off to Arrow. I love that they're getting high profile studio titles. It's not the first time.
Yeah.
But this is a pretty high profile, like could have been a Criterion, could have been something else. I mean, so I'm really excited that they got this, and I hope they continue a relationship with Warner Brothers and some of the other majors, you know, because they do great work. So
yeah, here's hoping.
Good stuff.
All right. So we both tied on our first pick.
Yeah.
Does that mean you go now?
You can go again if you want.
All right.
Because we both talked about it.
So I couldn't resist. I mentioned this on an episode of Shockwaves briefly, and I'm just going to say it. I picked up Kino Lorber's Hannibal.
Are you paying attention to me? For 10 years, you've waited for his return.
I have been in a state of hibernation, but now I'm back home, very healthy.
This Friday, the wait is over.
Are you ready?
We could have some fun.
Good evening,
Dr. Lecter.
See you around. Rated R. Starts Friday.
Oh, cool.
And I'm talking about the Ridley Scott movie of Hannibal. I love this movie. I haven't seen it in years.
I've never seen it.
Have you still not seen it?
Still haven't seen it.
Oh, my God.
It's ridiculous.
You need this disc immediately. So they did a 4K version.
Yeah.
I did not pick up the 4K.
I may do that then.
Yeah, go for the 4K one. Yeah. I just picked up the regular one because for me, at least on my current setup, high def is more than enough.
Gotcha.
And what's exciting about this is I believe they did a new transfer specifically because there's the 4K version. But all previous iterations of this on Blu-ray only had the movie. Like they've done so many sets that are like Manhunter, Silence of the Lambs, and this, and you know, packaged it all the stuff, and it's always just the movie. And the DVD, which I held on to for a really long time, has a ton of special features.
Holy smokes!
And
look at that.
If I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure a lot of these are Charles de Lazarica, who does a lot of Ridley Scott's bonus feature stuff.
Excellent.
And if it's not Charles, sorry, whoever really did it, but I'm pretty sure it is him. Well, anyway, the movie itself is obviously a sequel to Silence of the Lambs, semi-sequel. And what's fun about it, and this is where the special features delve in, is kind of the evolution of how they got from Silence of the Lambs to this movie. Because a lot of people don't remember that basically Thomas Harris, the author of the novels, was basically writing this as they were developing a movie. And it was like they were waiting for him, like, are you almost done with that book? Because we got to make the sequel. And so I don't want to say he was rushed, because he definitely just made the book he wanted to make. But in doing so, it was so radically different that I think everybody's like, oh, wait a minute. this is what we have to adapt, right? It's the next book. And so there was a lot. It basically takes place several years after, and Hannibal is living his best life in Rome under another alias. And Clarice Starling is a lot more seasoned, and she kind of gets in somewhat of a... There's a shooting at the beginning. It's basically a bust gone wrong. And basically the FBI, this organization that she's devoted her whole life to and loves, throws her under the bus for it. And so... simultaneously, while she's being kind of shamed, there's a private a police officer in Italy that thinks he knows it's Hannibal and is single-handedly trying to capture him, because instead of turning him over to the authorities, Mason Verger, which is the last surviving victim of Hannibal, is offering a shit ton of money to get him because he wants revenge.
Okay.
And it's played by an uncredited Gary Oldman.
Oh, wow.
Under tremendous makeup. And it's just, it's so, I mean, this is, I can't remember who said this to me, but it was somebody tweeted to me, when I mentioned it on Shockwaves, and it's so accurate. They're like, this is a Vincent Price script from the 70s that they just made in 2000 with those aesthetics.
Wow.
And gore. Like, it's true, because it is excessively gory, which you don't expect from Ridley Scott.
No.
But it really is. And it's also delightful. It's interesting because I also recently got the Criterion Silence of the Lambs, which is an excellent release. And it just becomes clear that they are totally different movies. Like, yes, they're sort of sequels to each other, but this is to be enjoyed on its own as just an over-the-top, gonzo, crazy serial killer movie. And I mean, even Hopkins, he's aged considerably. So he doesn't feel like the same Hannibal Lecter. He's a little goofier, which is kind of fun. Like, yeah. He says, like, okay now, and things like that, like okie dokie or whatever it is, which is deliciously funny. But it's one of Ridley Scott's, it's one of my favorite Ridley Scott movies. It's really, really out there. And I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again. It's basically like when I saw this like 2 weeks early at a screening in New York City. And I was in the same row as Stephen King, his son, Joe Hill, and his son's wife. And there is a sequence that towards the end that is so outrageous. I mean, it's not outrageous by today's standards, especially what they got away with on the show. But for 2000, it was the sort of thing that happened on screen that the whole audience was screaming. Like, they were like, oh, my God, I can't believe what I'm seeing. And me and my friend were the only people smiling. We looked over, and Stephen King had a huge grin on his face. We're like, we get it. This is amazing. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, Stephen King approved Hannibal.
Fantastic.
On Blu-ray.
Yeah, I got to see it. I got to see it. I'm excited, too, by the way, and I haven't addressed it on the show, but that Kino's branching into 4K stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Cool. That just, for me, bodes well in terms of, like, you know, them reaching a bigger audience and continuing to do good work and whatever. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. All right. So my second pick is one from AGFA.
Ooh, yes.
This is just come out in time for October. It is Scary Movie from 1991.
It's a quiet Halloween night. For just a few dollars, this place offers more than a few thrills.
This year, we're going to give more than your money's worth.
Are you going to get a ticket? Or are you going to get a ticket?
Psycho killer escapes on Halloween night. Yeah, right.
I must have taken a wrong turn or...
Dang right you took a wrong turn or...
This one, as far as I understand it, the box touts it as well. Never legitimately distributed until this very moment. It's a horror mood piece starring John Hawkes.
Yeah.
An early John, not his first movie by any means, but an early one for him. And it is fascinating. It is, I mean, he's great. He plays sort of a nebbish, nerdy guy. And it's one of those great, like, Halloween movies because it takes place in and around an actual Halloween haunt house. And have you seen it?
I have.
I figured you had.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm shocked that this exists because when I saw it, I think Mike Williamson had showed it at one of his Secret 16s, and it was.
I remember that. I didn't go, but I remember that.
And it was because this is a rare film print. It never got released on VHS. It's never been released, and so it was. And the thing is, this no offense to AGFA, they take some wild swings with some of their movies, and you were right. This is a little bit above what they normally put out in terms of quality.
Yeah.
I just think it is a fascinating movie.
Yeah. No, I'm really hoping this will be for them a big victory in terms of reaching some of the genre audience that hasn't been paying attention to what they're doing, which is really great work. Yeah, some of the movies are, like you say, wild swings. They're doing some Ed Wood stuff that's, I gotta say, while we're on the topic of the stuff they put out, The Violent Years, if you haven't seen that, is a crazy Ed Wood scripted movie that I love.
Oh, wow.
That they put out. Anyway, this is, I'm hoping a crossover breakthrough. So it's got that great Halloween vibe. It mostly takes place in the line going into this haunted house, and John Hawkes is, you know, he's very nerdy. He's got a button down Oxford shirt on. He looks like he works at Blockbuster without the name tag, but it's so much about him reacting to things. He's just very wide eyed. And there's a great bit. There's a commentary on here, which I really liked, with Joseph Ziemba from AGFA and the director, Daniel Erickson.
Okay.
And he talked about showing Hawks The Adventures of Ichabod Crane. And if you watch that, you can kind of see how he's playing a little bit of that. It's not cartoony per se, but he is incredibly wide-eyed in moments. And John Hawks' face just can play that really well.
Yeah.
And the other one was Terror at 20,000 Feet, the remake of the Twilight Zone episode with John Lithgow, the George Miller version in the Twilight Zone movie. And there's some of that in there too. So what you have is basically, he shows up, he meets his buddy, who's like kind of a party guy. He's got his girlfriend. He brought a girl with him to hang out with for John Hawkes, and they have a very awkward sort of exchange.
This is so exciting, Warren. Halloween night. The most thrilling holiday. Christmas is too expensive. Thanksgiving's for turkeys. Easter's for anyone who believes rabbits lay eggs. But Halloween, creatures of the dark, reign supreme. Demons, wolves, monsters.
And then they're waiting in line to go in the movie, into the haunted house, and then news comes on the police band that there's been an escaped mental patient, and we see a little bit of that.
Yeah.
The van goes off the road, and then so what ends up happening is we have a sense that the killer is loose and he's gotten into the haunted house, and so there's a great vibe of not only the Halloween feeling, but then going in the haunted house and then seeing like some stuff that they're doing inside the haunted house that may or may not be real.
Yeah.
Within the context of the movie and within the context of what's happening. So you're seeing people getting injured, cut up, whatever. You're like, I don't know if that's real or not. So it's got a great dreamlike quality to it and a really great ending. And it's just really underseen and underappreciated. And I hope that with this release, we'll get people adopting this as sort of a Halloween regular viewing,
because
I think it really puts you in the mood. And I think another thing that's great about it is it includes two shorts from Daniel Erickson.
Oh.
One of which I didn't get to watch. It's called A Little Hero, but the one I did get to watch is called Mr. Pumpkin, and it's from 1986. And this is a great primer for this movie. I would recommend watching it before you watch Scary Movie, but you could also use it to watch before Halloween. The movie Halloween or Trick or Treat. It's basically a story about, it's about 11 minutes. It's from 1986. It's about, set on Halloween night, these kids come home from trick or treating and their dad is putting one of them to bed, and he tells them the story of this guy, Mr. Pumpkin.
Now look, Leroy, I've told you about vampires and werewolves and ghouls, but I haven't told you about Mr. Pumpkin. Mr. Pumpkin lives in pumpkins Every Halloween, and this year, he might be living in one of ours. And he's big, and orange, and gooey, and he hates little children. So if you don't keep your hands off the candy, Mr. Pumpkin is going to come and get you.
Don't tell him things like that.
Mr. Pumpkin!
But it's a great mood setter, and I think if you're looking for something to program before your Halloween movies, this is the kind of short that's perfect.
Wow.
So anyway, it's a really, you know, it's a 4x3 transfer because I think it was shot on 16. Yeah, from the original 16 camera negative, 2K scan. But it looks great, and it's a slow burn. I hate to use that word, but it's a worthwhile movie for sure. And I hope those, again, that haven't checked out what AGFA's doing, start with this one, but then go look at their back catalog because it's a lot of great
stuff. This one's a gem, for sure.
Good stuff. So, scary movie.
Cool. Let's see what else I got. Oh, so I took advantage of the... I curse you for letting me know there was an indicator sale a while back.
Oh, I see what you got there. Nice.
And I bought the Bud Boddicker. Am I saying his name right?
Boddicker. Whatever.
Bud Boddicker. That's how I say it. Right. Western box set that they put out, which is five of his features with the actor Randolph Scott. I'd never seen any of them. I know there was a previous DVD set of it.
Yeah.
And so I've always wanted to dive into this. I mean, I love Westerns. It's one of those untapped... it's like almost every Western I get recommended, I love. They're great films. And so I picked up this box set and I could not, I mean, first of all, they're all like 70 minutes long. They're very short movies.
Love it.
And so I literally spent 5 days in a row. I just watched one per night. Like I didn't want to watch anything else once I started it, which was great. With the Tall T. And so, and it's interesting because they're all really good. People love different ones. I went with the middle movie, which is Buchanan Rides Alone.
Very cool.
In a place they called Helltown on the Border.
All right, man, pull them up.
Where a stranger like Buchanan with a saddlebag full of money didn't have an outside chance to ride out alive.
Right there, Buchanan. Step down.
Don't turn around. Who's going to do the shooting?
Both of us.
You please stay like you was.
I never expect to see you again today, Buchanan.
You kill me, Buchanan. Ain't nobody gonna open that safe.
You know something, Sheriff? It just might be worth it.
This was my favorite of the bunch, which is hilarious because I looked up on Letterboxd and my friend Rodman Flender, who recommended this set to me, said he reviewed this as his least favorite from the box, which I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Some don't like that one, but I think it's a really interesting movie.
I think it's interesting too. And so basically in this, he's, you know, Randolph Scott is, it's interesting because he plays kind of like, he's a lot older in all these movies than the average Western star.
Yeah.
And so, he's just this older guy, like making his way through Texas, getting ready to, kind of retire and settle down. He's in this town and basically there's, the son of the town family comes racing back into town with like scratches on his face. And it's like, he might've done something just over the border in Mexico, and a Mexican young man comes and takes revenge on him. And when everyone's going to jump him, basically, Scott's character like jumps in because it's obviously not fair. And then they both get kind of thrown in jail for the murder. And then there's this whole trial and there's all this, these politics that start happening. Cause like, you know, whose boy that is. It's like this big guy in Mexico. And it's like, he'll probably pay ransom rather than hanging him. And it's like the whole town just wants a hanging. And so the reason I liked it is because I felt like there were a lot of fun little twists and turns and people constantly screwing each other over.
Yes.
And I don't know. I just find that thoroughly entertaining when the narrative keeps shifting and you're trying to figure out whose allegiance is whose.
Yeah.
And in the middle of it is just Randolph Scott trying to do the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought this was excellent. Again, it's only like 80 minutes long. And it's part of this box set. I strongly recommend getting the whole thing.
Yeah,
it's just five great movies.
I think it was my number one pick last year. It's like my favorite release. I absolutely love it.
It's pretty exceptional. And, now I'd love to dip into more, Bud Boddicker stuff, but it seems like this is the cream of the crop.
Yeah, there's a couple you could get, like, Seven Men from Now wasn't in that set. That one's great. You'll love that. And there's a few more, but that set is a really good, gives you a good sense of what they did and how great those movies could be, you know?
Yeah, and all across the board is, you know, people like Martin Scorsese and Clint Eastwood. There's great little interviews of people talking about what these films meant to them.
Yeah.
So it's
highly
great.
Influential stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But my pick would be Buchanan Rides Alone.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So next up, I got another horror. Like I said, this is a new one I just got in my hands 2 nights ago. So this one, you know, just arrived, and I was like, I got to work this in. And this is the Olive Film signature edition of A Bucket of Blood, Roger Corman's film from 1959, I believe.
Hi, Carla.
Walter, what are you doing here so early?
Well, I brought something. I think you'll like it.
Take that stuff to the laundromat, Walter.
Huh?
Don't mind him. What have you got?
It's a thing I made.
Walter.
You like it?
What's he got?
Oh, come look at this, Leonard.
Well, where'd you get that, auction?
I made it.
You made that?
I said I did, didn't I?
Walter, it's very good.
Honest?
Honest.
What's it called?
Dead Cat?
Dead Cat? That's its name?
Sure.
Well, it sure looks dead enough.
You want to buy it?
Buy it?
That thing?
Scare people out of the place.
Don't be silly. It's tremendous. Look at the detail. The anatomy's perfect. Look at the expression on its face.
How come you put a knife into it?
I didn't mean to.
Just got carried away, huh? Well, all right. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put it in the corner of the alcove. If it sells, we'll split 50-50, okay?
Sure. Does this mean I'm an artist?
Maybe so. You can do other things as well.
All that is comes through the eye of the artist.
Yeah, you're a real artist now. I go in back and scrub down those garbage cans. Much now.
You really like it?
We like it. Now go on.
You know, the Olive Signature line took a little break.
Yeah.
And I don't know that there's been a new release since we've been doing new arrivals.
Yeah.
So I was really excited this came out. But even more exciting is that the majority of the extras on here are directed and edited and sort of produced by Elijah Drenner.
Yeah.
He said to say hi to you, by the way.
Oh, hello.
I was messaging him on Instagram, just telling him how impressed with this disc I was, because I think it's great.
And everyone should know that Elijah did the documentary on Dick Miller.
That guy, Dick Miller.
Yeah, which
is
great.
It's on Amazon Prime. Watch it immediately. It's fantastic.
It's wonderful.
It's one of my favorite documentaries in the past, you know, 5-10 years or whenever. I think it came out actually a little while
ago. It's been a couple years ago, but I mean, if anyone knows about Dick Miller and his filmography, it's going to be Elijah.
Absolutely. So when I saw the announcement that he was doing a commentary, I was like, hell fucking yes, that's perfect.
Yeah.
But he also does an interview with Roger Corman on here, which is good. And he does an interview with Dick and Lainey Miller, which obviously was done in 2018 before Dick passed away. But that's a really cute interview. Like, Lainey's mostly asking him the questions. And, you know, it's some stuff you've heard before, but they're just so charming, the two of them. And Dick is just one of my favorite, you know, people in movies ever. For those who don't know, the story of this movie is, I think it was his first like big centerpiece role. He plays a character named Walter Paisley, who is kind of working at a coffee house in the beatnik scene, the beat poet stuff, and he wants to be an artist, but he isn't really talented, and he ends up the first thing that happens, I don't want to spoil too much, but just to give a sense of it, first thing that happens is he accidentally kills his cat. And he makes a sculpture out of it. He puts clay over it and makes a sculpture, and that goes really well. And then things escalate from there. I won't go too much further, but you can kind of guess where it goes.
There's a lot of blood in his work. Let's put it that way.
Yes, exactly.
And he becomes kind of very well regarded as an artist for it.
Yes, it's really an interesting, satirical, but very funny and dark movie.
And I think things like Herschel Gordon Lewis' Color Me Blood Red.
Color Me Blood Red. Fiendish is the word for it. Color me blood red. This is Adam, and this is a story of Adam and evil. This is a film drenched in crimson, a blood-spattered study in the macabre. Color me blood red. You must keep reminding yourself, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. It's just a movie. Color me blood red. It will leave you aghast. color me blood.
Like, I think a lot of people took this premise and just really ran with it.
Yeah.
The idea of, I think that's the name of the Gordon Lewis movie. I get them confused. But basically the idea of an artist using their art from whatever questionable means.
Yeah. No, you might. Yeah, I think you're right. But no, it's a really fun Corman movie. One of the early ones that I like a lot. But again, this disc is really great. I mean, the movie looks great. It's a new 4K scan. You've got that Corman, the Dick Miller interview, and then Elijah does his commentary, which to me was, I mean, obviously he's knows his stuff. He's really well prepared. So it's one of those, it's almost like a Criterion level commentary where it's packed with information. There's a part that's like you know, those commentaries where it's somebody reading an essay. It's not quite that because he's obviously well prepared, but he makes it flow. So it's almost, it's just him, but it's almost conversational. Yeah. So it's not stiff, which is a really hard thing to pull off, by the way. I feel like people that write those essays are often not as capable of delivering.
The law is after us.
You
should keep that in. It's part of the fun.
It is. That's right. Recording live in Burbank. So part of the problem, I think, is people that can write an essay like that are not necessarily equipped to speak it.
Yeah.
And Elijah is one of those great dudes who is able to do both things. And anyway, it's a short movie, which is, it's like 63 minutes or something.
Yeah.
So it's not a long commentary, but it's packed with just so much great stuff. And I loved it. One of my favorite commentaries of 2019 so far. He also does a really neat thing. It's called Bits of Bucket, and it's a visual essay comparing the original script to the final version of the film.
Oh, cool.
So he takes Charles Griffith's script and he does a really fun thing where he shows some of the deleted stuff, but it's like they'll show the script page and then they'll show maybe the bookended scene before it, and then they'll freeze frame on a picture of the characters involved and they'll put like the dialogue from the script page on the screen, and he has people reading those lines. I don't know if he's in it. He's narrating it, but then he has other people doing the lines. So it's kind of cute and funny, and it's only about, I want to say it's like somewhere between 8 and 10 minutes, but he said to me that it's like an extension of the commentary, which it totally does function as that, but it was really great and a lot of fun. I don't particularly love deleted material. I'm usually like, yes, I see why that's gone.
I see why, yeah.
But the way that he did this, I thought was really neat and it really engaged me. So overall, I mean, there's more stuff in here. There's,
it's packed. I mean, I love that Bucket of Blood is getting this level of attention and love.
Yeah, it's a great disc. Like, highly, highly recommended. Bucket of Blood from Olive. Great stuff.
Beautiful. Okay, so my next pick actually calls back to a few months ago when I picked up the Criterion version of Police Story, the Jackie Chan movies. And I kind of went on a deep dive because I've always loved Jackie Chan. I didn't know that series. And here in America, a lot of his movies were released under different titles, but they were technically Police Story sequels. So Police Story 1 and 2 came out, and then Super Cop here is Police Story 3 there, and then First Strike is Police Story 4.
See, I had no idea this was the case.
Yeah, and they just kept going with them. And so this is, I think, the fifth, if I'm not mistaken, Police Story, which is a Jackie Chan production, New Police Story.
New Police Story.
A deadly open season. A terror attack with no motive. An heroic crime fighter.
I can't forgive myself. I owe my team.
Didn't you say you'd have us in 3 hours?
You're under arrest.
I knew it could happen someday.
PC-138 reporting.
I don't need a partner.
They turned you into a game and posted it on the internet. The whole gang are game crazy.
What's happened? Is he okay?
I'm his good friend.
Game starts at police headquarters.
If we win the game, they'll give us the next target.
Sam, you're a policeman.
One must know pain to be a hero.
See, it's a bummer when they have such interchangeable names because it kind of takes away from the specialness, I think. But you know,
sure.
What are you going to do?
But over there, I guess it's a big franchise. And the funny thing is, he's not actually the same character anymore. I think he is all the way up through First Strike. But then there's this one, and there's a more recent one called Police Story Lockdown, which is also excellent, where he's much older. But this is 2004. And, I'm fascinated by him in the recent movies, including Lockdown and stuff like The Foreigner, because it's like he can't do stunts the way he used to. And so there's something interesting about all of the life experience that Jackie Chan now brings to his characters. But that said, I think this is probably the last movie where he goes for broke and does all his own stunts.
Oh, cool.
There's some pretty amazing stuff in it. But basically, he's a disgraced police officer because he was kind of a superstar. He had his whole team together. They're going after this like sadistic gang of punks. And they break into their warehouse thinking that they're going to take them down. And the punks are ready. And they basically put them all in like Saw traps. Like,
yikes.
It's like Jackie Chan meets Saw.
I love it.
Which is not surprising because I think Lionsgate put this out here. It was 2004. So it's a few years after Saw. But yeah, so basically his entire team, and this is kind of in the beginning anyway, his entire team gets taken out by these punks. And he feels tremendous guilt because they were all like questions and obstacles that were presented to him that he failed.
Oh, wow.
And so basically, you know, he finally kind of gets the nerve to go back after them. And when he does, it's like some pretty amazing action set pieces, in typical Jackie Chan fashion. The fun thing about going through all his movies is, you know, usually they're pretty, I don't want to say thin plot wise. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward plot, but there's always at least two or three jaw-dropping set pieces where you're like, whoa, how'd they do that? And I believe in this one, unless I'm confusing it with one of the other 10 Jackie Chan, I'm pretty sure they do one pretty amazing set piece where they literally are running down the side of a building on a wire.
Oh, I love it.
And you're just like, God. But this is the last time he did that kind of stuff. But it's really cool. And again, I'm just so fascinated by the police story franchise, the fact that overseas he has all of these movies that are all kind of technically part of the same franchise, and that's the way I have them cataloged in my collection. I have Police Story 1, 2, Super Cop, First Strike, New Police Story, Police the Lockdown. Yeah,
that's great.
So yeah, if you want to catch up with Jackie Chan, you can't go wrong with any of the stuff that's labeled Police Story. So this is New Police Story from Lionsgate.
Excellent. Yeah, I got to see that one. Had not heard about it.
Yeah.
All right. So my next one is from Warner Archive. This is a Nicholas Rogue film.
Ooh.
From 1990. Yes. Have you seen this one?
I have seen it and I love it. And okay. I forgot it came out on Blue.
Yeah, it just came out on Blue. This is The Witches.
You know, when I was younger, I traveled the world in search for the Grand High Witch, but I never found her. I don't really believe that anyone has ever found her.
So if no one's seen the Grand High Witch, how are you sure she exists?
Nobody's ever seen the devil. But we know he exists, don't we?
Yeah.
For all you know, a witch might be living next door to you. When I was little, I lived beside a girl called Erica, who was taken by a witch. Erica had very strict parents. But even that didn't save poor Erica. Because when a witch chooses a victim, there is only one hope of escape. Knowing everything about them that I am telling you. Warning you. What makes her dangerous is the fact that she doesn't look dangerous. You can never be sure if it's a witch you are looking at or a kind lady.
Yeah, this is a really neat kids film, very much. Yeah, so this is
a movie that would terrify you as a kid.
Oh yeah,
this it is a kid's film technically.
100% kinder trauma terrifying movie. It's basically about this little boy who lives with his grandmother, and really early in the movie his mom dies, and so the grandmother's taking care of him, and she ends up taking him to, I think they're going to go back to England or something, and she takes him to this hotel to stay, and it happens to be a hotel where she also is very into witch lore, and there's some question mark as to whether or not she's actually a witch or whatever her deal is, but she knows a lot about witches.
Yeah.
And she tells them all this stuff about witches, that they don't like children, that they can smell children, and that if you see a person, a woman near you, and they seem to be looking like they're smelling shit, that means, she doesn't say that, but that they are probably a witch. And
real witches are quite bald, although of course they wear wigs that itch and cause them scalp rash. Do you know what scalp rash is?
No.
Itching under the wig must drive them crazy. They look quite hideous behind their human face masks. and can only be distinguished from ordinary women if you are sharp enough to spot the purple tinge to their eyes. Real witches have no toes. Their feet have square ends, revolting stumps where their toes should be. So they never wear pointed or pretty shoes, just plain, sensible shoes. Remember these things.
He has a little run-in with somebody, but anyway, so they go to this hotel. It happens to be the hotel where the witches are basically having a fucking convention.
Yeah.
And the convention is run by Angelica Houston. She's the head witch. And
naturally.
Yeah. And she's really good.
Yeah.
But there's some other characters in the movie. There's like sort of an Augustus Gloop type that is there with his family, and Rowan Atkinson plays the manager of the hotel, yes, and he's actually very good. But the kid sort of gets himself caught in the room accidentally where they're having their big meeting, and it's a locked door meeting, and basically once they close the doors, the witches like take their faces off and they look just disgusting and they're really scary, and they're talking about their plan to basically poison all the children in the world and turn them into mice.
Yes.
So they have this potion that they test out on a kid, and this is the stuff where it gets really scary, is there's actually some scenes where kids are turned into mice, but it's like, you know, Jim Henson Creature Shop slash almost American Werewolf in London type. I mean, I don't want to give it too much credence, but in terms of the impact and the actual makeup,
yeah,
it's pretty scary.
And it's pretty great.
Yeah, it's
great
pretty stuff, well done. Yeah. But so yeah, to see these kids turned into mice is creepy and scary, and the witches are terrifying, and they're all after this kid. And so it's almost like not Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but it's like he's not safe. And so kids in peril kind of stuff. But yeah, the effects are really good, and it's well done. But yeah, like really a traumatic, like I was kidding, as a kid's movie, you could show it to a child, but it's one of those that would probably scare the shit out of them.
Yeah, I'd say it's scary, but fun.
Yeah.
Kind of in the way that maybe something like The Black Hole is, where it's like, it's kind of scary, but it's kind of fun too.
Yeah.
So when I was in France last summer, my fiance Alyssa showed me this and Hocus Pocus. We did a double feature of the two movies, and it was a lot of fun. And I didn't think I had seen this. And then I'm like, wait, Nicholas Roeg directed this? Wow. And it used to be on cable all the time. And I just remember the scenes of the kids as mice and that freaking me out. Like, oh my God, they got turned to mice.
Yeah.
And the transformation scene. That's what I remember. But I had a blast revisiting it now. And now I love it. I think it's a perfect Halloween themed movie.
Absolutely.
For sure. So I got to get this disc myself.
Yeah. And the transfers previous to this have been pretty shitty on DVD. So yeah. This is a really nice looking new transfer, which I always love that Warner Archive does a good job with their stuff. So yeah, really neat movie, just in time again for October, The Witches.
Beautiful. All right, fifth and final pick, not including a runner-up. So ever since Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I've been all in on so many little things. I've been on my Tarantino kick. I've been on my Leonardo DiCaprio kick. I've been on my Scorsese kick because of you freaking guys on Pure Cinema. So I keep going back and forth between what I've been watching. And so I've been getting all of the Leo Scorsese movies because I hadn't seen a lot of them, and just Leo in general. And I forgot that I'd owned in 3D The Great Gatsby.
I still haven't
starring
seen it.
Leonardo DiCaprio, and Tobey Maguire.
I'm Gatsby. His smile was one of those rare smiles that you may come across four or five times in life. It seemed to understand you and believe in you, just as you would like to be understood and believed in.
Sorry, old sport, I thought you knew.
Please, just... I don't know what to say. Please forgive me.
It's quite all right.
I've had so much to drink.
Yes.
Mr. Gatsby, sir. Chicago.
Oh. I'll
be just a minute. I'm taking my new hydroplane out in the morning. Would you like to go with me?
What time?
The time that suits you.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Lovely to see you again, Miss Baker.
There's anything that you want, just ask for it, old sport.
It's pretty excellent. Now, I didn't realize this. It's a long movie, which is probably what kind of kept me off from watching it. But this is directed by, Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, that's right.
So I didn't know that. I like popped in. I'm like, all right, we'll check this out. And I heard, some stories about Method Leo, during his Great Gatsby era, how he was trotting around town. basically as the Great Gatsby. But obviously this is a very famous novel, and it's been made into a movie several times. I thought this was pretty spectacular. It was it's a great retelling of this. I think the thing that Baz brings to it is a huge fantastical element, because it's obviously a story that's set in the 20s, and yet there's musical sequences that feel very now, and like very up and now. And basically, Tobey Maguire moves into this town on, I think it's Long Island, actually, which is kind of ironic. And his neighbor is like this reclusive guy named Gatsby that everybody talks about, and he throws these wild parties, and nobody knows if he's even real, because it's like nobody's ever seen him or hung out with him or anything. And of course, it's Leonardo DiCaprio. And basically, it's he forms like this bond and friendship with Tobey Maguire's character, and kind of takes him under his wing. He's like this super wealthy guy. Everybody in town knows and loves him. He gets pulled over by the cops, and it's just like, oh, sorry, sir, sort of thing. And then you start to learn a bit about his past, because Gatsby has a connection to Toby's character's cousin, a long-lost love. And basically, a lot of everything that's happening at the center of it is because of this long-lost love. And so, you know, I don't want to give up too much more than that. I mean, if you've seen any iteration of it or were forced to read it in school, you already know. But I thought it was pretty terrific, and it looked great in 3D.
I was going to ask.
That was the other thing. I was like, it's because, again, Baz's like dance sequences are always like so colorful, and they have so much pop to them. And I mean, these are like extravagant parties that, I mean, who knows the budget on this movie, but it's really, I was very impressed just with the 3D. I'm sure it looks cool in 2D, but if you can get the 3D version of this, I absolutely recommend it. And I've seen it pop up on Amazon for like $15 or less recently. So, you know, keep your eyes peeled on this, because it's definitely worth it to see it that way.
Cool.
And yeah, again, it's the guy that did his version of Romeo and Juliet and Moulin Rouge. Haven't really dipped into the special features yet, but again, I was just like, so I don't want to say I never got Leo, but I never got Leo. You know, like, he doesn't look like the traditional. I think that's the beauty of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, is it's made me completely reevaluate his entire filmography as an actor. I mean, this is the kid from Critters 3. I've been with him since then. You know, we're about the same age, so I've seen him go through everything. And more so, I thought it was fascinating. That's kind of why I want to watch the Scorsese movies, because, as you guys pointed out in Pure Cinema, like, basically Scorsese ushered him from a kid to a grown man. Like, now, from Once Upon a Time in the last couple of years, I see him as a man.
Yeah.
You know, and a leading man. So, I don't know. It seemed like this is in that wheelhouse of, like, really good adult Leo performances. So, cool. great Gatsby, 3D.
Very cool. I'm definitely in the frame of mind to watch that at this time as well, because of Once Upon. So, good stuff. All right. Oh.
This is the joy of doing the show in person, is I see him as you pull him out and I get excited.
Yes, indeed. So I was going to talk about Hell Comes to Frogtown, but I heard you talk about it on Shockwaves.
Which is great.
I may still bring it up at some point, but I was like, let me dip into the old Vinegar Syndrome archives and see what I got. And I pulled out an old gem that I'm a fan of, but I'd forgotten how fucking bonkers this movie is. And it is Mausoleum from 1982.
I've been treating your niece since she was a child. Her behavior's been normal for over 10 years now, Cora. Believe me, there's nothing wrong with Susan. What's really bothering you, Cora?
Susan is starting to behave the same way her mother did before she died.
Come, let you and I get going again.
You're the only one that's going, bitch.
What's wrong with my wife?
She's not your wife.
I've never seen you like this before.
I've never felt like this before.
The woman you're living with looks like Susan. She looks exactly like your wife, but she's not your wife.
And holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
Is really what... I mean, so I rewatched this last night, and I was like, because I was like, I remember liking this, but I remember it being pretty weird.
Had you ever seen it look this good before?
No.
Oh, okay.
And that's
so
the
this
other
is
thing.
Another, yeah,
I hadn't
this is
cracked this disc open. Yeah, I hadn't cracked this disc open yet, so I cracked it open, and looks great. This is Vinegar Syndrome, so obviously it's going to be a well-done disc. But yeah, I mean, this movie is like, I mean, It opens with crazy. See, here's the thing about bonkers movies. A lot of them fall into categories wherein they open with a crazy event, and then you're kind of riding that and kind of waiting, maybe a little bubbling of craziness, and then maybe a big crazy at the end.
Sure.
Or sometimes just a crazy at the end. But this movie has insane stuff like every two or three scenes. It literally keeps...
insane.
Like just, I mean, we're talking like almost extra bonkers. Like yeah. not quite extra level, but almost. So it's got psychic powers. It's got actually a lot of psychic powers with green eyes stuff, which is great. Marjo Gortner being completely nutty. It has more than casual racism, unfortunately, but that the character involved is actually quite entertaining also. It has some weird score moments where it turns into like a parody of a 50s sitcom for a second. It has domestic drama. and then it has things like they'll play like a real sensitive scene in the tub with the main woman like topless and like hugging and kissing Marjo Gortner. It's just like so bizarre and doesn't feel right in so many ways. But I think that if you're looking for like that bonkers movies to watch this Halloween, this is my pick for this.
I wholeheartedly agree with you.
Right?
I watched this disc when it first came out. I had my buddy Josh Miller come over, host of Best Movies Never Made.
Excellent.
He's also the best person to watch movies with because he says the funniest things at the most inappropriate times.
I love it.
And for example, in this one, there's like a whole thing where like the gardener's kind of like scoping the lead girl the whole time. And then finally, she just seduces him. In a way that's like, it's just kind of funny. It's like almost like a gratuitous sex scene only to murder the gardener. And then so the husband comes home and Josh is like, "Hey, honey, how's your day?" And Josh is just like, "Oh, it's great. I had sex with the gardener and murdered him." Like, it's just like, oh.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, I don't even want to try and guess what's all in here, but I mean, there's like some like Carrie, I guess, some Exorcist. Yeah.
It's a little bit of everything.
You know, but it's a mix enough that I'm like, it's not, it feels like an Italian movie, but it's not ripping off anything in particular. But I think it would also play as a nice double with Phantasm due to the cemetery mausoleum setting.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, I was just having such a great time watching this movie. And continually being like, well, that was a great bonkers scene. They're probably not going to do, oh, here's another one. This is great. And it just kept going and satisfying me in this way that I was like, oh, that was beautiful. That was a beautiful experience.
Therefore, did the demon extricate itself from the crown of thorns, departing the confines of the outer rimmed area of hell, and was rewarded with the eternal possession of the first female born of the family known as Nomad. Once having left the mausoleum, the demon is one with the possessed and can only be returned to rest by the firstborn having reunited the demon with the crown of thorns. And lest we forget, no nomad woman must enter the sanctuary of the mausoleum. Jonathan Nomad, August 16, 1682.
A totally fucked up and bizarre movie, but yeah, like we'll definitely fill that slot for your Halloween viewing if you're interested.
Oh, so, yeah.
Mausoleum. Oh, and this Blu-ray by Vinegar Syndrome is great. New 35 scanned camera negative 4K transfer thing. Making Monsters, a video interview with special effects makeup artist John Carl Beekler.
And they were very specific on the kind of thing they wanted. They wanted a real old-fashioned demon, you know, with possibly faces on elbows and breasts and guts and that sort of thing, you know, some really crazy thing. And once I did a few sketches, then I went to some paintings, and they were pretty specific. And Bob Barish, who was pretty much in charge of the movie creatively, loved it. And I think that's why I got the gig.
And he's great. Obviously, he's done a lot of great... He worked on Friday the 13th movies. He's done a lot of great work.
Yeah, he passed recently.
Yeah, so. And passed away recently. But the effects in the movie are really
great,
good.
Great stuff.
On top of this bonkersness. But yeah, this is like, you know, The Visitor. I mean, this is like really good bonkers movie that you need to check out if you're into that stuff. So that's my next one.
All right. Well, I think we went through five. So it is time for a follow-up.
Yeah, follow-up bonus,
yes.
Whatever.
So my bonus disc, I'm going all in on Tarantino, and I'm going to pick the Blu-ray for Inglourious Basterds.
Cool.
My name is Lieutenant Aldo Raine, and I'm putting together a special team. from director Quentin Tarantino.
We're going to be doing one thing only, killing Nazis.
Their mission is secret. Their name,
I assume you know who we are,
is legend.
The Germans call them the bastards.
Like that, nice.
This summer,
you have all our rotten eggs in one basket.
Your objective?
Blow up the basket.
Brad Pitt.
I'm.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Inglourious Bastards.
And the main reason being is I have this in the Tarantino box set, the 20 years of filmmaking box set. I think it's the last, chronologically, the last movie in there before Django Unchained came out. And when I was in France, the day that I arrived in France was my birthday and also the opening day of Once Upon a Time in France. And so my fiance and I went to see it immediately. We had a great time. And another local theater was showing all his movies for the remainder of the month. And so I was like, oh, let's go see. I haven't seen Inglourious Basterds in years. Let's go check that out. Now, just so you know, most of the movies in France, they usually show the version that came out here with French subtitles, unless you specifically go out of your way to see a French dub. But for the most part, it should be fairly friendly to an American audience. So I go assuming like, oh, yeah, I remember this movie. What I totally forgot is that 95% of this movie is not in English at all.
I forgot this too.
Almost all the characters speak either French, which is not subtitled, German, which is subtitled in French, or English. And the only English scenes are the scenes with Brad Pitt, and he's only in about three or four scenes. So when you look back, because again, and this is the beauty of Tarantino's dialogue, is it's so rich that you just remember it all being in English, even though it's not. And so it was actually kind of fascinating to watch it, knowing what they were saying, yet not knowing the language they were speaking in. And also, you know, studios complain that no American audiences would sit through a foreign film or whatever. It's like Tarantino fooled you all, because yep, he did release a foreign film and you all went to see it. So it's good for that case. But anyway, I came back and wanted to watch it where I could understand it. So I broke out the disc. It's still a great movie. It's one of his best. And again, what's interesting about his filmography, because he's trying to craft like basically a perfect 10 film filmography, is I liked this when it came out. It was on the heels of Death Proof, which is a good movie, but maybe a little bit of a left turn in terms of what he was doing. Cause again, it's like Pulp Fiction was this huge juggernaut, and then Jackie Brown was kind of not as well received, but which now time has been much kinder to in a lot of people's favorites. And then after that, he kind of bounced back with like the commercial hit of Kill Bill 1 and 2, and then he did Death Proof, which is like this weirdo like grindhouse thing. So there's lots of ebbs and flows, at least chronologically as they were coming out. And so this was just a big return to form. And he did stuff narratively that people... It's almost obvious, but it's become a thing he does now, which is like, oh, guess what? I don't have to stick to historical accuracy. It's so much more fun when I go in a direction you don't expect.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's not that I've never seen that in a movie before, but it's just one of those shock things where you're like, oh, that's where he wants to end the movie? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And so I love it for that. And I mean, obviously, if you don't know what it's about, it's basically a small elite group of Jews led by Aldo, who is Brad Pitt in one of his best performances.
That's great.
Going through France to hunt and exterminate Nazis. Who would have thought that this movie is more relevant now than ever? Mm. Actually, this should be re-released in theaters, yep, right now, quite frankly, to, yep, send a little message. Yes. And my one, it's so funny. My one, again, this is what time does. My one thing I didn't love about the movie was always Eli Roth initially. And I think part of that was because I that part was meant for Adam Sandler.
Oh.
And he got stuck on Funny Games and couldn't do it. And to me, it's like, if Adam Sandler came out of that cave as the Bear Jew, hot off the heels of Punch Drunk Love, it would have been like amazing.
Yeah.
And so I think when I saw it, I couldn't get over that. And then you see Eli Roth, who's primarily known as a director. And it's like, oh, it's like him up against Brad Pitt, who's like an amazing actor and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story short, this is the first time I was able to watch it objectively. And Eli's actually pretty darn good in it. Everybody's really good in it. So I love this movie. I wish there was a extended version or something, because there is so much material that was in the trailers that's not in the actual movie.
I don't even remember.
And there's a great shot of, I forget the name of the actor, but he was on Freaks and Geeks, like kind of like the
Sam Levine.
There's a, in the trailer, Sam Levine running towards screen, shooting machine guns, screaming. And you're like, what is that?
That's right.
I want to see what that scene was, whatever it was. And it's not in the final movie. So, I don't know if footage exists or anything like that, or if there is a longer cut of it, but hell, if Quentin's doing these like Netflix extensions, like maybe this is a good one, to go back to. And there's great features on the disc. There's the film within the film, I forget the name of it. Basically the, you know, Joseph Goebbels is showing a big screening of this movie with, what's his name? What's the lead character in this, the actor he was in.
Damn it.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on it.
Well, he plays Baron Zemo in all those other movies. He's the star of the movie that they show. And basically you can see that whole short, which is like 6 minutes long or something like that.
Christoph Waltz? No,
not Christoph Waltz.
I'm talking about somebody
else. Yeah, the younger guy.
Oh, okay. I'm totally blanking.
Me too, but don't worry about it. You know what I'm talking about. Yes, Baron Zemo from the Captain America movies.
Gotcha.
The movie that he stars in, there's the full movie on the Blu-ray. There is the making of that. And then there's a really great little tribute to the original Inglourious Basterds, because there is a movie called Inglourious Basterds. This is not a remake of it. It's more of kind of a companion piece, if you will. And I didn't realize that the original director cameos in it as well as the original actor. And so I was like, oh, that's kind of neat. I didn't realize Tarantino did tie it into the original Inglourious out of a tip of the hat in respect to it. So, if you haven't seen it in a while, I think now is best time possible to revisit it. So
yeah.
Inglourious Basterds.
Daniel Brühl.
That's it. Yeah. Yes.
I did not know that. All right. Well, that's a good one. My last pick is a classic horror thing from 1958. This is from Scream Factory. It is called Monster on the Campus.
I say that if you were injected with this, you'd revert to a primitive anthropoid, physically as well as mentally.
Only one scientist dared investigate the incredible phenomenon. How a pet dog reverted to an antediluvian wolf.
Look at those teeth. That dog is a throwback.
How a simple dragonfly had become a winged monster of a species extinct for millions of years. Now, before your very eyes, see a man revert to a half-human anthropoid from the dawn of creation. A monster leaving behind a trail of death and destruction.
Oh, it's impossible. Nobody's got a footprint like that.
I'll rest when I find the killer.
That's not your responsibility. That belongs to the police.
Madeline, I know what I'm doing.
Even he did not suspect the incredible truth. Neither did the police, nor the girl coming to keep a lover's rendezvous.
And this is directed by Jack Arnold. To give context, he did Creature from the Black Lagoon in 1954, mm-hmm. Revenge of the Creature and Tarantula, both in 1955, Incredible Shrinking Man in 1957, High School Confidential in 1958, and then this, Monster on the Campus, also in 1958. So if you like his stuff, I think there's definitely, I don't want to say if you love Creature from the Black Lagoon, you'll love this, but it's, you know, it's cut from a similar cloth. And if you like that sort of movie, it's very much a Jekyll and Hyde or werewolf / Bigfoot type monster story where this paleontologist accidentally gets himself cut, and then he puts his hand in this water for this ancient like fish specimen, and the infected water gets into his cut and it turns him into a monster.
Wow.
But it is definitely a Jekyll and Hyde thing. So he can't totally control it. And it's on a, 1950s campus. So I kind of like that environment. I don't know. There's something, it's not a camp thing as much as it's just like a specific thing on its own that I just kind of like. Old college campuses, I don't know why, it's amusing to me.
Wow.
But it features a transformation scene that starts out like the Wolfman, but then suddenly cuts to a dude in like a rubber mask, which I think is an interesting choice. And the weirdest thing is that the mask has like this helmet hair on it that you can't, I mean, you can kind of see it on the back.
Oh yeah, that looks great.
Yeah. So that's kind of amusing. It's like one of those things where it's like cheesy and it requires a little more suspension of disbelief, but I still had fun with this one. And if you like, I brought up a lot of these sort of 50s sci-fi movies this show, and it's definitely in line with those. And if you into those, you'll like this one. So Monster on the Campus is my bonus from Scream Factory.
Wow.
So that is it for this month's new arrivals. We got a lot of good stuff here.
Our first crossover ever.
Yeah.
Through a on brand, a 3D title.
I like it.
I think we did all right.
I like it. Yeah. And a great crossover too, by the way. I love that we both picked Cruisin'. That's wonderful. Well, thank you, Rob. This has been a pleasure
as always.
Nice to hang in person. Yeah, we haven't done it in a long time, but good to get the environment.
The Burbank sound that's going to be a terrible post thing for you.
It's all good. It's all good. No, it's nice. But anyway, hopefully everybody enjoyed this and have a wonderful and Blu-ray filled week. And we will talk to you very soon.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Bye-bye.